You're listening to Last Word Radio, where you get the last word.
Sports. I'm Molly Smith, and joining me as always is Rob Mitchell. How are you doing, Rob?
I'm good, Molly. How are you?
Yeah, very well, thank you. And joining us this week, our special guest is Emma Thurston, writer of Out on the Full. Emma, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, hi everyone. Good to be here. Thanks for having me, both of you. Looking forward to this evening. Lots to talk about.
Yes, definitely. So let's we'll crack on with it, shall we? We're going to start with the weekend roundup as usual. And of course, lots of European rugby played this weekend. We're going to start with the Champions Cup. And Leicester Tigers kicked everything off on Friday night against Stade Francais. They won 33-20. US Sonics versus Ulster. I think that was that game cancelled? No, that went ahead.
The Ulster game, I thought was postponed.
Yeah, I thought that was postponed as well. The Racing 92 versus Glasgow Warriors, that was postponed as well after Friday night's events. But Munster versus Treviso went ahead and Munster won 32-7. Saracens also beat Toulouse 32-7 as well. Northampton Saints got a narrow win over the Scarlets 15-11. Leinster had a quite resounding loss to Wasps at home, 6 points to 33. And Ospreys beat Exeter Chiefs 25-13. Emma, I'm going to come to you first. What was the standout match for you over the weekend?
I think that there were two for me. The overall victory that Wasps put in on the road at the RDS. I was there last year when they were up at half-time, I believe, and they didn't score any points in the second half. And to go over and to make a Leinster side that are slightly disjointed with internationals coming back, but still they made them look very average. And they did that with really strong defence, and their attack finally clicked with Charles Piatau putting in, you know, man of the match performance and linking in really well with Christian Wade and Frank Halai as well. Yeah. They'll be really pleased on the road. So that one certainly stood out for me.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I've been to the RDS and I know what it's like for Leinster, and I know how much of a fortress it normally is. And, you know, the crowd get behind the boys so much. Rob, were you surprised by it being such a big scoreline?
Yeah, the comprehensive nature of the win surprised me. Wasps obviously a very good side. They've built well over the summer, but very few teams go into that stadium and win by that kind of margin. It was a shock to see that sort of margin of score rather than perhaps a Wasps win, but yeah.
Yeah, Northampton, I'm going to pick up on the Northampton game as well, because they only won by 4 points against Scarlets. Now, Saints haven't got off to the greatest start in the Premiership, so this for them was, you know, a bit of a fresh start. They needed to get the win. They did, but Scarlets also got that bonus losing point as well. So, Emma, do you think that Saints, you know, are still looking to cement their position at the top of that pool?
Yeah, I think it's a tricky one with Saints, because on paper, they look really strong, and they always do when you read their lineup, but as you say, this season just hasn't clicked for them yet, and they haven't really found their spark. It was a win, but as Jim Mallander said afterwards, they did all breathe a sigh of relief that they got the W. And obviously this weekend they're going up to Glasgow Warriors, who have got so many Scottish players. I think they had 21 at the World Cup.
Yeah.
And they'll be, although the World Cup obviously ended difficultly for Scotland, they'll be full of confidence. So it's not going to be an easy trip on the road, and whilst they'll be pleased that they got the win, they still really need to find their spark and a bit of razzmatazz. They're just looking slightly off colour, to be honest, and I can't really, you know, put my finger on why.
No, I'm not sure many people can, because like you say, on paper and the transfers that they've made over the summer, yes, they've had a few players going out, but the likes of, you know, Jamie Gibson coming in at the side, and they're still retaining George North. He's still playing very, very well. And you just think, you know, these big names, that come in and, you know, should strengthen a side as well as the as well as the other players that surround them. They just don't seem to be the Saints that we're used to.
Yeah, it's a funny one, isn't it? Early season form, because some sides you can put it down to, you know, Bath had a bit of a slow start to the Premiership, and their pre-season was obviously really disjointed with the number of players that they had away from international duty. But I don't think Saints, or maybe they did, I'm not sure in terms of the numbers, but maybe they're still suffering a little bit of a pre-season hangover, and you're going to be a little bit later to the party and firing. But we are four rounds into the Premiership and going into the second round of Champions Cup now, so it's, you know, it's got to be the time where things start clicking.
Yeah, you would have thought they've had their warm-up. Rob, do you think it was made a little bit more difficult because they were at home, that there was that expectation to get a big win? And like Emma just said, you know, that they're on the road to Glasgow this coming weekend, which is definitely not an easy place to go. Do you think that perhaps the pressure got to them, or do you think they are just going to be utterly disappointed that they didn't extend that lead?
I think they're going to be disappointed with their season as a whole so far. I don't think the pressure is a valid excuse, because Northampton are a big side. Their fans expect wins no matter who they're playing, so that comes with signing for the Saints. They've got to pick it up soon, because they're in a tough pool. Obviously, they're going to Glasgow. The Pro 12 champions Scarlets are going well, and they've got Racing 92 to play as well. So that you can't have off days in that pool, otherwise you're going to be out of the tournament very quickly.
Yeah, just another one to pick up on. Saracens and Munster both won by 32 points over 7 against Toulouse and Treviso, respectively. Do you think that these big score lines are going to dominate the Champions Cup, and do you think that the bonus points here and there are going to separate those at the top of the table to those who come second?
I'm not sure the big scores will become the norm. I think the bonus points will be vital and will possibly define who goes through and makes the quarterfinals in the end. It could come down to that. So I think both Saracens and Munster getting that point, and also Leicester against Stade Francais. I think that was a vital bonus point in that pool. When you think Stade Francais, Munster and Leicester will all be looking to qualify. So bonus points will be vital in that pool, definitely.
I think Saracens will be really upset that they didn't get their bonus point. Their first half, I was at Allianz Park, and it made everybody's heads turn. You know, they were really strong in defence, and they looked great going forwards. And it's, you know, Saracens aren't normally known, renowned for their heads up rugby. You know, let's be honest, their style of rugby, you don't say straight away, yep, that's how Saracens play, but they did. And they really, I wonder if that bonus point will haunt them. It might not, but it's just, as you say, these pools are so strong that points here and there really mean a lot.
Yeah, of course they do. We're going to move on now to the Challenge Cup, and Harlequins kicked things off last Thursday with a huge 41 points victory over Montpellier, who scored 18. Brive faced Newcastle Falcons and won 13-9. Edinburgh won 28-10 versus Grenoble. NCISCM played Connacht and they lost at home 14-31. Calvisano lost by 50 points to 9 versus Cardiff Blues. Worcester had a 19-3 win over La Rochelle. London Irish had a big 48-10 win over Argon. Gloucester won 23-10 over Zebra. And Newport Gwent Dragons won 30-12 points against Sale Sharks. Emma, what was the big game for you that weekend?
Well, I enjoyed watching Thursday night's, you know, everything kick off in terms of Harlequins. It was an interesting match, that one, because the first 20 minutes Montpellier really had Quins's scrum on toast.
Yeah.
I mean, they made, you know, Joe Marler and Adam Jones, I believe, were in the starting lineup, and Dave Ward was in the middle at hooker, and they had a real tough time. And then all of a sudden Harlequins, you know, showed a bit of character, dug deep and turned it around. So that was, Quins have started the season well, and they showed that in that match, I think, when the going got a little bit tough, that they had a spot of resilience, and I was, you know, it was good to see. I think some of the other results, I know some of the pictures seeing Connaught away at playing in Siberia under blankets at the subs bench, that was quite, yeah, quite amusing, and I hear they've had a tricky trip home in terms of their visas running out because their flight was cancelled, so it's taken them a 2 or 3 days to get home. So it won't be a European trip that they'll forget in a while. Those were some of the couple of moments for me from the Challenge Cup.
Yeah, picking up on that, the weather conditions, I think, and obviously the travel, things like that can affect a team when they're going into the next game, can't they?
Yeah.
It's yeah, I think for me, Harlequins was a great match to kick the whole European rugby off with. Like you said, Adam Jones, I'm trying to think how you pronounce his name. Is it Nariashvili? The guy who's up against the loose head for Montpellier. But he was, for a guy like Adam Jones to be driven over as much as he was, he stood his ground. And like you said, Montpellier's scrum in the first, definitely 20 minutes was just so dominant, wasn't it?
Mm. Yeah, and it's interesting that they weren't able to convert that as much as they should have done into points, because, you know, ultimately the scorelines read Harlequins 41, Montpellier 18. And, Montpellier have shipped, I think, 100 points in their last two games, which isn't what you want, especially when you've got such a solid base to work off as they did.
Yeah, definitely. Rob, what was the standout game for you? You know, obviously the Challenge Cup is the next tier down from the Champions Cup, so you almost expect a little bit more competition between these teams because they are sort of that next tier down, because they've got a lot more to prove, because next year they want to be fighting for the place in the Champions Cup.
I'm going to pick out London Irish again, 48-10. I think the reason I'm picking out this one is I think that going back to your question, I think we see bigger scores in the Challenge Cup, in the pool stages at least, due to the fact that I think the teams in France and England and even the Pro 12 that are just below the Champions Cup cut-off sort of from last year are a lot better than the teams at the bottom end from Italy and from obviously Russia. So I think you're going to see a bit more lopsided scores in this tournament, because obviously Irish haven't had the best start to the season, yet a quite comfortable victory for them and a big good confidence boost for them going when they return back to Premiership action in a couple of weeks' time.
Definitely. I think there is a lot to be expected from this division of the European rugby, because, like you say, there is such a mix of teams. You've got teams that perhaps people have never heard of, and then you've got the likes of Harlequins who could on a good day be playing in the Champions Cup. So yeah, I think it's definitely going to be a good league to watch in terms of development of rugby and you know, seeing these players come through and stand up against the bigger names, and we'll have to see how it develops, because like you say, first week in and there's definitely plenty of points there on offer, and I'm definitely for one excited to see how it continues for the rest of the season.
Well, it's interesting this season as well, because the winner of the Challenge Cup automatically gets their spot in the Champions Cup. Yep. Which obviously didn't happen last season, so there's a real nugget there for, you know, any of those sides, and I suppose particularly with a Premiership hat on, to nail that Champions Cup spot through the Challenge Cup. So that's the ultimate big prize that they've all got their eye on this year.
Yeah, of course. And I think for like we say, for a lot of teams, this is their chance to, you know, to make their name known and to for their players as well. It's such a big occasion for teams like Argon and Oyonnax and guys like that. This is their chance to really develop their side and play against some of the best in Europe. So yeah, it's going to be exciting as we go forward from this first weekend. We're going to move on to the news now. And the first one is Michael Chica has distanced himself from the England rugby role. Obviously, Stuart Lancaster last week resigned, stepped down from that role after a disappointing World Cup stint with England. Emma, I'm going to come to you first. Did you ever think Michael Chica was going to be within touching distance of that role, or do you think he was always going to be, you know, sticking to what he knows and happy where he is already?
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't surprised that his name was thrown into the hat in terms of his credentials and his credibility. Yeah. Because everyone can see what he's done with Australia in in just a year, turning them round in terms of all aspects, getting them firing, getting the players that he wants there playing, and reaching a World Cup final. So in that regard, I wasn't surprised to see his name thrown in the hat. Yeah. Did I ever think he was going to take it? No. You know, he said this week at the Barbarians press conference, you know, his job is the dream. He's an Australian coaching the Australian national rugby side. I don't personally think any amount of money would have tempted him away from it to come and coach England at this point in his career. I wouldn't rule a move out for anybody from a different union to an England job or to another nation, because, you know, stranger things have happened. Mm-hmm. But at this point in time, I never thought he was a realistic contender that would say, yeah, I want this job and I want it now.
Yeah, and the fact that Australia, you know, did so well in the World Cup, okay, they didn't win it, but they put up a good fight, and they proved a lot of critics wrong in terms of Chiga's redevelopment of that side in you know, how they play and a few selection issues as well. So I think for him, I've got to agree with you, he's cemented his place there, he's done a good job, and like you say, for him, he's happy doing that, and long may it continue, because, you know, for what he's created this year at this World Cup, I think it's going to be very prosperous for Australia as it goes ahead. And like you say, for England to be poaching somebody like that, yes, it would have been a big mean feat, but I'm not quite sure it would have suited him down to the ground. There are a lot of other names who have come into contention. Eddie Jones, Jim Mallinder, a lot of the Premiership coaches, actually. Rob, what are your opinions on, firstly, people who have already distanced themselves from the role as well, and people who are still in contention?
In terms of people distancing, anybody under contract is going to distance themselves at this point, because they're still tied to whichever union or club they're currently in charge of. What they say privately may be totally different, but publicly they're going to say no. I think I agree with them. I don't think Michael Chiga was ever really a realistic target. He's an Australian in charge of Australia, and he's got them going in the right direction. He's going to want to see that job through to the next World Cup and try and go one step further than he's done this time. Apart from that, I'm not sure I'd rule anyone totally out of it right now, even despite what they've said publicly. But the one person that does seem to want the job, despite the fact he's got a contract, is Jake White. He's the only person that seems to be sticking his hand up. Even the English coaches are saying, I'd like it to be an Englishman, but not me, sort of thing. So he's the only one probably who come out and said yes, but we'll have to see whether the RFU go in that direction or not.
Yeah, there has been a lot of discussion where the RFU go from here, because it almost seems like there should be a queue forming of people willing to take on that role, but there isn't. Firstly, I'll come to you, Rob. Do you think that there's something fundamentally wrong at the RFU for people to not be willing to stand up and say, yeah, actually, please count me in, because I'd be really excited to take on this job? Do you think there's something wrong with the RFU underlying that is preventing people from doing that?
Is there something wrong with the RFU? That's a slightly separate question, because I'm going to say yes, there's a lot wrong with the RFU at the moment, but
okay.
I don't think that is stopping people from wanting the job. I think there's a lot of pressure that comes with this role, and as I said, I think people under contract are possibly not going to burn their bridges before the RFU have stumped up the money to release them from their contracts. I think what they say in private might be slightly different, but I mean, for example, Eddie Jones sort of said before the World Cup he would like to do the job, but he's now under contract with Stormers, and suddenly he's got a slightly different tune and he's sort of towing the party line. I think if England suddenly paid enough money to Stormers, he might be interested, but until that moment comes, I think he will stick to I'm a Stormer.
Yeah, Emma, the RFU have turned around and said that money isn't an issue. Do you think that there is something, you know, that's not quite right at the RFU for people not to be stepping forward and demanding that they're considered for this role?
I think there's a timing thing here as well. A lot of the I suppose, potential candidates are in contract, mm-hmm. Which you're never going to have a vacancy at a right time, I suppose, when there are lots of people available of the right caliber, of the right standard. So, and I think there's a lot of pressure to get this recruitment right. Mm-hmm. It's a sort of a tricky time after a World Cup which didn't go to plan, and you know, ultimately Stuart Lancaster has always said, you know, I'm the head coach and I'm accountable for that, and he's taken a very honourable decision. I think I've got a lot of respect for him as a person and what he's chosen to do, and we all know that any head coach that comes in has got a number of intricacies that come with the England job in terms of that might be different to other nations. So I don't think I've really answered your question as if there's something fundamentally wrong. I just think there's quite a lot to consider when taking this role, and also ultimately with Ian Ritchie, there's a lot of pressure on his shoulders to get the right individual.
Yeah.
And only time will tell to see if he can do that.
I raise a good point there. Ian Ritchie's position is no way secure. He's really got to get this right.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of people, I'd include myself in this, that think he should have not been in the review process and should have been part of the review itself as the man in charge. So he's sort of in the way that Stuart Lancaster hasn't had a stay of execution, so he's got to get this right, otherwise it will be his neck that goes as well this time.
Yeah, Richard did say himself that the book stops with him and he's accountable for anything that might happen in the future. And like you've both said, I think this time around they've got to get it completely right, not rush into it, and get the right person for the job. I also spoke to Leicester's director of rugby, Richard Cockerill, and this is what he had to say about the appointment of new England head coach.
I think there's lots of English coaches that are capable of coaching England. I think in England, in the Premiership, there's a lot of good English coaches. You have to look at Exeter and Saracens, Northampton, to see that there's some quality there, both as head coaches, DORs, or assistant coaches. So it's just whether you actually want the job, do you want to take all that baggage with it as well.
We also asked him as well about whether he thought that the next England head coach should be of an Englishman himself. And obviously he's just said that there's a lot of people in the Premiership who could take that role on. Emma, I'm going to come to you first, because I'm not quite sure where England go from here in searching for the next coach that is going to lead them to, hopefully, to victory in the next few years ahead of the 2019 World Cup. Do you feel like there's a pressure for it to be an England man, or do you think that they could go and look elsewhere, possibly Southern Hemisphere, get a bit of a different approach to rugby
My personal point of view on this is that I suppose I'm not wedded to seeing an Englishman in charge of England, and whether that's, you know, very modern or, you know, a bit cuckoo, some people will disagree with me, but I don't think the nationality of the head coach dictates too much. No. I think England are in a position where they've said, you know, money is no object and nationality doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And I'm in agreement with that, because you look at what's happened in other home nations, you know, Joe Schmidt, Warren Gatland, yeah, Vern Cotter, none are of the nationality of the side which they're coaching, but they're delivering brilliantly for their sides. And ultimately, you want somebody to be a fantastic coach. Mm-hmm. I don't think it matters where they come from.
Rob, do you think that the Southern Hemisphere style of play would suit England? I mean, like I just said, you look at Warren Gatland, Joe Schmidt, Vern Cotter, these guys have come in and kept the traditional values of each nation, but sort of, you know, they've added to it and brought it a little bit more alive. And you've just got to look at the fortunes of Ireland and Wales to see how well their style of play is redeveloping. Do you think, Rob, that they, that the RFU could go down that route? Do you think that's something that they should certainly consider.
It's something they should certainly consider. I mean, you can merge styles of rugby here. The other home nations have shown that you don't have to suddenly just abandon what is your traditional style of play. But it's interesting to see a lot of people have been saying, oh, it should be an Englishman, but I think I agree with Emma. It doesn't have to be. We should be the best man for the job. We've had several Englishmen since we won the World Cup, and it's got progressively worse actually in terms of results. So it's definitely something that should be best man for the job, not necessarily where he comes from. I think there's a lot of good young English coaches in the Premiership that maybe next time out would be ready for it, but I don't think there's any of them that I would necessarily say are ready for that job now and that pressure. And we've gone the last two times we've had Martin Johnson, we've had coach with very little experience at all, let alone international experience. Mm-hmm. And I think we've actually got an English coach out there right now that's got international experience, and I think that's something this team needs.
I think Mike Ford's got a little bit.
I was going to say. Okay. You've got Dean Ryan, who did coach Scotland at one point as well, and
that doesn't count as international experience.
Richard Cocker has worked alongside, you know, Heineke Meyer
as a head coach. Is what I'm talking more about.
Yeah, no, I understand where you're coming from. Like you say, it's got to be, they've got to hit the nail on the head, and they've got to get it right this time, because, like you say, otherwise the people sitting in their high chairs at the RFU, their necks are going to be on the line, and I'm sure there are going to be a few unhappy fans, to say the least. I'm going to come to both of you. Rob, first, I'm going to put you on the spot. Take out consideration who you'd want to have the job. Who do you think will get the job?
I think it will possibly be Jake White, as in the end, just because he has put his hand up and said he wants it, which potentially means he's had a discussion with Montpellier that they would release him should England come calling. I would prefer Eddie Jones. I think he would suit the role better, but having just been appointed at Stormers, I think it would take a hell of a lot of money for them to say we'll let him go. And I'm not sure, as much as the RFU have said money's no object, this is the RFU we're talking about. They always like their money.
Emma, how about you?
Do you know what? I'm going to sit on the fence and wait and see on this one. I'm really struggling to call it because of, as you say, in terms of individuals that have either ruled themselves out or publicly, but maybe not privately. I'm not 100% sure. So I'm not going to hang my hat on anyone. I'm going to wait and see, and then I'll let you know about it.
Who would you like to have the job?
Oh, what, in the entire world?
You can pick anybody.
Parallel universe. I'd love to see what Steve Hansen could do with the England squad. I think he's cut his cloth with the New Zealand, or, you know, with the All Blacks, who have got great skills and world class talent. And do you know what? The talent that is in England rugby at the minute is really strong, and the talent moving forwards to 2019 is great. It's stronger than I've seen it in a long time, and it's getting those right individuals in. And I'd love to give him the England squad and say, do you know what, Steve? Here you go. Show us what you can do.
Yeah.
I think he fancies a crack at the Lions first.
I think you're right. Yeah, but you did say anyone in the world, though.
Yeah,
so, you know.
Molly, same question to you then. As
anyone in the whole world?
Yeah.
Not yourself.
Not myself. I'd be the first person to rule myself out. Anybody in the whole world? It's going to sound like an odd one, but I'd like to see what Heineke Meyer could do. Just purely because I think he's got his critics, definitely with South Africa, but I think what the ethos that he's got and the attitude that he's sort of developed with that side, I kind of see there's a lot of reflection in a future England side with the current South African side that they've got at the minute. So I think if he got the chance again, give him the team, see what he can do with it. If he falls at the first hurdle, then I will be in the firing line. But I think in an ideal world, it wouldn't be everyone's first obvious choice, but I think for me, I think it'd be more inquisitive of what he could do rather than knowing that he would do a surefire job. So yeah, I think for me it would have to be him, just because I'm interested to see what else he can do elsewhere.
To be fair, I don't think there's
Who's
yours? Sorry, mine?
Yeah.
I said Eddie Jones. I'd pick Eddie Jones.
So he's your man.
He would be my choice. Given that he seems to develop players very well. You've seen what he did with Japan, and I think that's what England need right now. We've got a lot of players who have not had great international careers in the last sort of 12 months, and as you said, we've got a lot of good young talent coming through, and that needs to be developed in the right way so that it is peaking in 2019. The potential is there, it just needs to be realised, and I think he's a coach that could help those players realise that. What do you make of the rumours saying that they may extend the search and maybe Andy Farrell in charge of England?
I mean, for me,
for the Six Nations.
I couldn't ever see one of those three support coaches ever being solely in charge. I think for me, I think it would be something a little bit different, but I think they'd all have to, you know, have some sort of role as head coach and you know, put their heads together, because I don't think any one of them. I mean, you said it earlier, Rob. Neither Mike Catt, Roundtree or Farrell have stepped forward and said, actually, okay, I'm already part of the setup, but I'd like to take the next level on. None of them have done it so far, so I don't think, you know, it would be right for them, even if we haven't got a head coach by the Six Nations. I'm not sure one of them would be able to hold that responsibility of a whole team solely by themselves. I think it'd have to be a joint effort.
It'd be interesting to see, because obviously doing it by committee would bring its own pitfalls as well. I'd rather that one of them was in charge for the Six Nations than us rush the appointment. Let's get the right man. And okay, yeah, it may not be the best Six Nations ever, but given the World Cup we've just had, I think the expectations aren't going to be particularly high anyway.
Yeah, I think England are going to pull out a really strong Six Nations.
I think they might, but I don't think expectations across the country will be overly high. Whereas I think Scotland may have the opposite problem. The expectations after Australia will be extremely high, and I think they could slip back to similar what they were last year in the Six Nations.
Yeah. We're going to leave that to bed for the time being. We'll have to play the waiting game to see what happens. You know, it could be weeks or months since, you know, until we actually hear if anyone's got the job. But we'll carry on discussing it as we do. But like I said, for the minute, we're just going to leave that there, and we're going to move on to some other news now. Australia's Matt Tomoa has signed for Leicester Tigers from summer of 2016. Rob, I know you are interested in the Tigers setup as well. Firstly, what do you think of him as a signing? And secondly, what do you think he can bring to the side?
Obviously, he's a great player. I think it's a very good signing for Tigers. It's a bit more long term than, say, the Jean de Villiers one that they've made this year. So it's good to see that they're still using we don't want to see loads of imports, but the imports they're bringing are world class, rather than just anybody that from abroad. So be interesting to see how he adapts to the Premiership. But obviously, he's a great player, and I think he'll do very well for Tigers.
Yeah, Cockerell did say that they aren't closing the door on John de Villiers. It is a short-term contract, but there is a possibility, even with Tomoa coming in, that if he wants to, that de Villiers can stick around. Emma, what do you think about this signing? There is this thing at the minute of Tigers, that they're being flooded by Southern Hemisphere influences. A lot of transfers have come in over the summer ahead of this season from the Southern Hemisphere, and with Scott Hansen and Aaron Major coming in coaching roles as well. Do you think that this is a way forward for Tigers, you know, keeping them traditional values but putting that edge on them?
Yeah, I mean, I was one that wondered how Leicester were going to do this season, knowing that they had signed a number of individuals but not necessarily a huge number of names. Obviously, that's changed with these couple of signings in particular. Everybody knows the heartland of Tigers in terms of their pack and their mentality and their culture at the club. But as you say, adding that little bit of spark, and we can already see Aaron Major's influence in terms of their bonus point win at the weekend. I think they only scored one bonus point in the Champions Cup last year and four in the Premiership. And if they play like they did at the weekend, on Friday night, then they're going to score a lot more. And it's good to see fluid rugby out the back, and you know, it wasn't perfect, but if they continue to do that with with the types of signings that they're making, then it's got to be positive. You know, things will be looking much brighter than they have looked in the past season or so.
Yeah, they always, I mean, past couple of seasons haven't been great for Tigers, but specifically last season, they were flooded by a lot of injuries. Yeah. And there was a lot of controversy about Cockerill. It seems that the general consensus this time round, and, you know, a year on, that actually Cockerill is really cementing his place there. A lot of people this time last year were calling for him to step down, and even when he got his contract renewed, and which takes him further another 2 years, a lot of people were saying that he wasn't the man for the job. But this season, they've got off to a great start, haven't they, Emma?
Yeah, and we are only four rounds in terms of Premiership, mind you, but the start of the season is always a good indication of how it's going to go on. And I think Richard Cock was very open as an individual. He knows where his strengths are, and he knows where his weaknesses are as a coach, and as a director of rugby, and he's very open with that. And he's built around him now and building the right team to take Leicester forwards. I think he was aware that perhaps he didn't have exactly what he needed, and now he's got that, and he's working, you know, very, very hard with Aaron Major in terms of their relationship together. Mm-hmm. To make sure that they're singing off the same hymn sheet to ensure that everybody else is. And by the looks of it, there's some, you know, good fruits of that labour coming forward. So it'll be interesting to see if it continues. You know, my gut feel says it will do.
Yeah. So. Well, earlier this week, I also caught up with Leicester captain Ed Slater, who, alongside discussing getting back in the Tigers shirt himself, talked about the club signing Tamua and what impact he will have on the rest of the squad.
Yeah, really good signing. Really exciting to see his come to the club. I had a little bit to do with Matt when I played in Australia. We were at Eastern Suburbs together, and he was kind of just starting to break through to the Brumbies then, and yeah, absolute quality. And I think you can see from a lot of the players that they're excited about playing with him next year.
Rob, Tigers tend to have this thing as well where they like to put a lot of effort and concentration into their academy players and bring players up through from grassroots rugby and make them, you know, it's almost like fruits of their labour, isn't it? That, you know, you look at the Youngs brothers, they're a classic example of guys who've played with Tigers through the age groups, and now they're performing very, very well. Do you think, despite these foreign signings coming in from Southern Hemisphere and elsewhere, do you think that Tigers are still going to continue that grassroots and academy drive?
I still think they will, and because you look at the calibre of player they're bringing in, I think that will help, because the youngsters will get to play with these players. What would worry me is if when you started to bring in players that were international quality, that they're just your, it's hard to say average super rugby player, because I don't think there's such a thing, but you get what I'm saying. Just a guy that just is a squad player in a super rugby suddenly comes in, that's when you start to worry about how the development of these younger players, because why can't they do the same job he does? Well, when you bring in a player of John De Villa's experience or the quality of Tamua, they're going to get exposed to that, and that's going to help these players develop. I think that's the moment the Tigers have got the balance just about right. But you've got to be careful of how you continue to go down this path. But then you end up with the French model, where you have your all-star rugby team and no local players at all.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the dangerous territory that obviously a lot of Premiership sides don't want to find themselves in. We're going to move on now to some more transfer news. And Wales lock Luke Charteris is reported to have agreed a two-year deal to Bath. Emma, he's a 32-year-old, and he's out of contract with Racing 92, and it's almost like that do you think that he's decided to come to the Premiership, do it as his swan song, and then hang up his boots?
I'm not too sure on this one, to be honest. I know that Mike Ford was asked about this at the final Premiership round, and his response was, they're always looking for quality players.
Okay.
So
that's the typical response from any director.
Of course. So Luke would be a quality addition to any Premiership side, I think. He'd add a lot. He's experienced. And I suppose it's watch his space on this one. Let's, you know, see what happens. Yeah,
like we say, it's just reported at the minute, but I think... For someone of Luke's calibre, and you know, he's is so internationally experienced as well as at club rugby. I think, yeah, again, like we've just been saying, is another guy who can come in. He's been capped 62 times with his country. He can, you know, share that wealth of knowledge that he's got to younger and developing players. And at a place like Bath, that's not going to go amiss, is it, Rob?
No, it's not. Anyone of his experience is going to be welcomed into a side at Bath. Obviously, they've had a bit of upheaval in the last few weeks due to the Sam Burgess sort of thing, but they'll look to get themselves settled very quickly. And I think Mike Fuller will always be looking for quality players to bring in. Obviously, they had the flirtation with Faletau over the summer that didn't quite come off for well-published reasons. So, like any top side, they're always looking to bring in quality players, and a player, if you've got experience to go with that, that's always a bonus.
Yeah, definitely. We'll have to see what happens with that. Like we say, it's just reported at the minute, but I think that'd be a great signing for Bath. Like you say, after the turmoil they've had in the past couple of weeks, a bit of secure there in their forward pack will do them a world of good, even if it is not until the 2016-17 season. But yeah, something to look forward to, definitely. Apparently, two Welsh players have been banned for drug use. They both play in Division 1 West in Wales. Owen Morgan, who's 25, and Greg Roberts, who's 28. They have been banned, I think it's 2 years and 4 years respectively, for taking banned drugs. And, you know, it's nobody in whatever sport, you don't like to read articles like this and hear news about this. But Emma, do you think it's an underlying problem with the way that rugby is going forward, that it is a lot more brawn rather than brains now? It's almost like that they feel like they have to bulk up, and part of that is, you know, perhaps playing around with drugs to try and enhance their performance.
It's not something I've ever come across personally. I don't believe that it is an underlying issue in rugby. It's highly prominent at the minute in other sports, you know, in particular in athletics, in terms of what's come out recently. It's not an area that I'm particularly close to be honest, that I've either spent a lot of time thinking about or read about. So I don't think it is, but I may be, you know, not as informed as others who may correct me on that.
Well, at the IRB conference last it was sort of this time last year, obviously it was ahead of the World Cup, and they did focus a lot on the anti-doping side of the sport. And because it is, you know, such a physical game, it's almost like that players do chance that, oh, actually, shall we just try it? And see if it does help us and run the risk of being caught. Rob, obviously this is, it's not championship or premiership or obviously international rugby, but the fact that it's happening at the lower tier area, you know, area of the sport, do you think it's almost like that if it's happening there, then it could be increased throughout grassroots and throughout sort of the age groups, that, you know, there is a chance that the odd person or peer groups could be trying these out to try and, you know, enhance their game?
There's always a chance, and I think there's more chances you go down the pyramid, because the testing is not quite up to the same stringent checks as it is at the top level. I think the rugby authorities have to just tread very carefully and make sure everything's transparent. As Emma alluded to, it's very big in the news in athletics, and there's been obviously accusations of cover-ups and things and what's going on with Russia. So rugby just needs to make sure that there's nothing, that they did everything they could, and they didn't look the other way. There can be no accusations of that, otherwise rugby will get dragged in with athletics, with cycling. I don't think you can ever make sure everything's 100% clean, because there's all the people, human beings, and there's always that one or two idiot that thinks I'm going to get the edge this way. It's finding the best way to catch them, punish them, and make sure that process is transparent.
Yeah, definitely. And obviously, a lot of it is about education and informing these players that it's not the way forward, and obviously it's not the right thing to do. But yeah, it's It's disappointing to hear, but like you said, you know, there's always going to be somebody who just tries it, and unfortunately that's just the way of the world, and you just have to sort of try and stamp it out as much as you can, don't you? The last piece of news that we are heading on to tonight is that EPCR Chairman Simon Halliday says the rearrangement of postponed games over the weekend could be a problem. Obviously, the horrific events on Friday night in France meant that a lot of the European games were cancelled, like we said, the Ulster game and so on and so forth. And Bath Chairman Bruce Craig has also come out and said that the rescheduling of these games, obviously Bath's game against Toulon was cancelled. There's a lot of doubts around rescheduling because of how tight this season is, not only with Premiership, but with the European games as well. Emma, obviously it's putting it into perspective, sport clearly isn't, you know, the most important thing right now, but when it comes to rescheduling these matches, do you think there's any possibility they could be possibly midweek matches?
First of all, I'm 100% in agreement that they should have been postponed. It was 100% the right thing to do. In terms of the schedule, it's so jam-packed that I think the only way I'm struggling to see how you could do it, to be honest, with the schedule, and it's not a conundrum I'd like to have on my hands to try and you know, manage all of those dynamics of all of the different competitions in a schedule where it's back-to-back weekends all the way through until May, I think. So I haven't got the answer on this one, and I'm very intrigued to see. I believe they said that they would announce it within the week of what the plans would be, because I'm not sure how I'd do it. So I think they'll need to be creative on this one.
Yeah, it is a very quick turnaround, isn't it? And it is almost player welfare is an issue, because you can't expect a team or you know, a numerous amount of teams in this case to field players three times within a space of 7 or 8 days, Rob. It's almost a little bit too far-fetched, don't you think?
It's going to be a struggle, and as much as I agree that it should have been definitely postponed, I don't, and they couldn't have foreseen this, but I think possibly the wisdom of having a whole back-to-back season is possibly looking a little bit shaky now, because although for example Toulon down in the south of France probably won't have this issue, games in England over the winter too tend to occasionally get postponed due to weather conditions, and there's no room for that either, and that would put further strain on this schedule. So it's going to be very tough for them to find a spot, and as you say, turning these teams around for say a Wednesday Saturday is going to start to bring serious questions on players that have already done that sometimes this season, with the internationals that did that in the World Cup.
Yeah, and obviously like we say, the season was postponed slightly because of the World Cup, and then England have a tour at the end of this season to Australia, so for English based players especially, there is this pressure to get the games every weekend. But it's swings and roundabouts, isn't it? Yes, the weather can cause an issue, and like you said, there's no real leeway there for rearranging games, and obviously in this situation as well. But it does test the teams, doesn't it, Emma? Because, you know, they've got to have that rotation of their squads, and they've got to have their players on their game as much as they can, because there's no room for, you know, there's no room to sort of have a week off or step down slightly, because you've got to play your A game constantly for 24 weeks, haven't you?
Yeah, this season is really the season of the squad. Coaches and directors of rugby have said it before in terms of rotating their squad, and it has been lip service on occasion, but this year, and we've seen it already, individuals have been rested, and they have to be, because an international fly half can't play every game for his club, every game for England, every game for his club. It's physically impossible. So this is where, you know, without any postponed matches, the season is about who's got the depth. And also, interesting, Rob Baxter was saying to me at the start of the season, it's also around which club can be firing at the end of the season and still really in a positive, motivated frame of mind to really get up for those knockout games at the end of the year, should they be in that position. Because it's testing mentally as well as physically a season like this. So it's interesting on a number of levels.
Of course, yeah, like you say, not only physically but mentally as well, because the attitude at the and the, you know, the mental way that they approach games at the start of the season is going to be completely different when they've gone through the winter, when they've gone, you know, they've slogged it out for that long. When you come to the end of the season, you know that the end is nigh, and that you're still fielding, you're still trying to field a strong team despite playing in rain and snow and very cold conditions throughout the winter. Rob, there really is no way for any team to, you know, sort of, there's no way for them to like these games, there's no way for them to rearrange any sort of manufacturing in their sides, is there?
No, it may come the teams that win out this year and go home with the tour, it may be those that manage to not necessarily lead the charge from the start, but sort of come up from within the pack and peak at the right time, much like Wasps used to do in the mid 2000s. They find form, get into fourth place, and just ride that momentum all the way through. And whereas you might now find that someone like Saracen, I'm not suggesting they will, but just because they're out in front at the moment, lead the pack for a long time, but suffer from fatigue both physically and mentally come the end and aren't quite as sharp. But it'll be interesting to see. I think it's the director's room, we're going to have to be very careful, otherwise we're going to see a lot of injuries towards the end of the season.
Yeah, definitely, and there's a lot of things to consider over the season, both with European Rugby and Premiership and Pro 12 as well. So we'll have to see how this goes forward. And that's the news for this week. We're going to move on now to the final section of the show and preview this upcoming weekend's games. We're going to start with the Champions Cup as always, and Ulster will face Saracens. Benetton Treviso will host Leicester Tigers. Bath play Leinster. Toulouse are against US Oyonnax. Glasgow Warriors face Northampton Saints. Scarlets will play Racing 92. Exeter Chiefs will play Union Bordeaux. Clermont Auvergne will host Ospreys. Stade Francais will play Munster. And Wasps, finally, on Sunday, will play Toulon. Rob, I'm going to come to you first. What's the game you're going to be keeping a close eye on this weekend?
I'm going to pick out two. Bath versus Leinster and Stade Francais Munster. Both just to see how Stad and Leinster react to the defeats they've had this week. Starting with a loss in the Champions Cup is never ideal. Starting with two is bordering on crisis, because you haven't got many games to then make up those points. So obviously Bath haven't actually played in the competition, but it's not like they're fresh. They've been playing Premiership rugby. So I think Leinster will have a reaction. Can they go into the wreck and get that win? I'm not 100% sure. Bath are a very solid team, and it's going to be very difficult for both sides, both Leinster and Stade Francais, to sort of recover from their opening day losses. I think either of them would have fancied the next opponents after a loss.
Definitely. Emma, how about you? What's the standout game for you this weekend?
I think for me it's all about Pool 5. So the Bath-Leinster game, as you say, and then Wasps-Toulon on Sunday afternoon. I'm like you, Rob, I'm totally intrigued to see how Leinster come back. Leo Cullen has already said, you know, we're scrambling, and it's only after round one. And they had their duel at the Aviva Stadium in the quarterfinal, and, you know, Mike Ford was saying that match still gets me, you know, that one still hurts. So there's a lot of backstory to that match, which will be very interesting to see. And you've got Ford versus Sexton and all of those matchups. I think that's going to be pretty special. And then obviously Sunday afternoon, the champions arriving at the Ricoh Arena. Wasps are in strong form, obviously. We talked about them at the beginning of the show. And they performed well against Toulon in their quarterfinal last year as well, one of the other quarterfinals, and should have taken more than they did from their loss. You've got tremendous matchups as well in terms of the back row. You've got Armitage and Fernandez Lobbe, and you've George Smith, Nathan Hughes, and then you go into the backs and there's Habana and Wade and Piatow, and I think it's going to be a cracker. So those two I'm, as you can tell, pretty excited about.
Yeah, I think Sunday afternoon is cancel the roast dinner. I think we're all going to be sat around the TV or in the stadium watching that one. It'll be interesting to see if Wasps managed to sell out the Rico as well, because you know, what is it, 33,000? I think that's going to be, it's going to be some crowd to perform to.
And that's why they got the ground, isn't it? For big games like that, they want to sell it out. And
I don't think the Rico will have hosted such a big occasion as this one. So yeah, that's definitely one to look forward to. Challenge Cup now, and Cardiff Blues will face Harlequins on Thursday night. La Rochelle will host Gloucester. Argon play Edinburgh. Montpellier will face Calvisano. Zebra will play Worcester Warriors. Sale Sharks versus Pau. It's Castres Olympique versus Newport Gwent Dragons. Connaught will play Brive. Grenoble will host London Irish. And finally, Newcastle Falcons will play NSI-STM on Sunday. I think this is like we said at the top of the show, this is a little bit more interesting because of the mix and matching that we've got here. You've got the likes of Harlequins and you know, Worcester Warriors, who in the Premiership, you know, they're newly promoted, but they don't act like it, do they, Rob? You've got sides here that, you know, your Gloucester, your Edinburghs, that are really challenging that place for Champions Cup glory the season after.
I think Quinn's Cardiff Blues will be an interesting game. I think if the winner of this will stake a big claim to be favourites for the rest of the tournament after their opening weekend. I think both teams feel they should be in the other competition, that they didn't have the best of year last year, and will be looking to get back at any means necessary. And as Emma said earlier in the show, this is a route for them this year. There is no playoffs after this. It's winner takes all.
Yeah, Emma, what game are you going to keep a close eye on, purely because it's you know, this league is so exciting. You know, there is a lot of chance for manoeuvre in terms of points, and you know, are we expecting a lot of points scored this weekend?
I think, like any competition, if the weather permits, then we should expect points. As you say, there are some strong sides, and I'd say particularly the Premiership sides in this competition that really want to use this as looking at a number of players, but also giving them a winning platform to go back into that domestic competition. My eyes, like everybody else's, are probably going to be on the Blues versus Harlequins. I think that's going to be really, really interesting matchup. And also looking at how the Sale Sharks bounce back in terms of they lost last weekend, but they're back at home, and what are they going to do? And you know, Worcester Warriors' form on the road, as you say, they got, you know, Worcester got 10 points from their first four Premiership games. I don't think anybody thought that they would have done, but they did. And then they're playing some good rugby, and they've got Saracens in the doubleheader the week after. So interesting to see in terms of selection as well. There's quite a lot of dynamics in terms of the Challenge Cup. So it should be, you know, it should just add to what will be a great European weekend with all of those Champions Cup fixtures as well. So much rugby on, it's a dream.
Yeah, I think for me, it's Zebra versus Worcester. I think Zebra had a fantastic start to the Pro 12. I think they've gone way above the expectations and on their shoulders. And again, same with Worcester. Like you just said, Emma, great on the road. Beat Northampton at the start of the Premiership season. And yeah, I think they are really riding high at the minute. And long may it continue in the European game as well. Rob, just give me one game that you're going to be keeping an eye on.
Aside the Quins one, I'd say the keeping an eye on Newcastle Falcons against NC. I think it'd be interesting to see how they react. Obviously, they lost to Connaught last week. They're playing top at what you consider for this competition top opposition again, and it'd be interesting to see how they develop across this tournament. And if they do well, obviously we see it as a regular thing, see the Russian sides come in and potentially see the expansion of the Challenge Cup.
Yeah, definitely. It's like I just said, there's more rugby than you can shake a stick at this weekend, so plenty to sink your teeth into. And that's it for this week's Absolute Flanker. Thank you so much to Emma and to Rob for joining us this evening.
No worries.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's been brilliant. It's been lots of fun and plenty discussed. You can follow Absolute Flanker on Facebook if you want to, at facebook.com/LWS Flanker. On Twitter, sorry, it's at LWS Flanker as well. You can follow Rob on Twitter at
LWS Rob.
And Emma, you can follow Emma on Twitter at
EmmaThurston23.
Super stuff. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, it's at Molly Ray Maria. Also, you can head over to the rugby part of Last Word on Sports Department. That's at LWS Rugby Union on Twitter as well. All that's left for me to say is thank you very much, guys, again.
All right. Thank you.
And we'll be back same time next week with all the same stuff. So thank you and take care.
You're listening to Last Word Radio, where you get the last word.